Can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
So now what are we going to get pissed about?
What's that?
What are we going to get pissed about now?
Nothing. I'm going to pray something and see if you're on board. I don't know why I'm doing this more and more, and I used to not do this, and I'm doing it all the time now. I am rating commercials.
Well, we know that you hate the wax figure commercial.
I can't. I think it's one of the creepiest things on television. I have no idea who this guy's supposed to be and why anybody would think it's cool to get a wax figure themselves. He looks creepy. Now there's two of them, and one of them's a wax figure, which if a creepy guy makes a wax figure of himself, it's like multiplies the creep factor by 10. They're trying to I disagree with.
I think his reaction as the thing's melting. Nah. That to me is funny. What's scary to me, and I recognize, and I guess I do know this ahead of time, it's just a wax figure, but it breaks at the ankles, and I get the vibe going of watching athletes when they break their ankles. It's kind of what happens. It just snaps at the ankles, melts there.
I love the Progressive Insurance. Don't turn into your parents.
Those are great commercials.
I love Travolta Santa.
I do not like that.
I know. I got to tell you, though.
What's the next one?
Nick Saban's Bed and Breakfast is fantastic.
I love it.
Nick Saban.
No fun.
No fun. No games. It's
a two-flush max.
Yeah. They've got variations of it. No showers longer than 5 minutes. This isn't a spa. They have a variation where a woman kind of laughs, and he says, it's the rule.
Right.
And points at the book. It's the rule. Everything about those Nick Saban's Bed and Breakfast commercials are fantastic. The fact that he's in the hot tub with the couple.
Yeah. That's awesome. He's mowing the lawn. You know, I love
this. No games, no fun.
Saban, now that he's not coaching, is an interesting guy.
Yep. He's really good on TV. Like,
he's great on TV.
The only thing it's so funny, and ESPN keeps putting him in this position, and it's fine. It's not that big a deal. At the beginning of College Game Day, they do this sort of like college whip around where they're just showing highlights of games that are coming up, and a different member on the desk previews the game. Well, Saban's reading a script, and he's not really good at reading scripts right now, so he sounds like he is reading a script when he previews Texas Tech at Baylor. And it doesn't really matter at all, but that's like the only thing that I find he's not great at. But Nick Saban, as a commercial actor, Saban Bed and Breakfast is a fat, I just love it every time it comes on, because he's so good at looking them in the eye and saying, no games,
right?
No fun.
Check-ins at 3:00. It's 2:55. Exactly.
No, he says, I know.
I know. It's like, you're early. You can't check in yet. We have rules.
So you're on board with Nick Saban, Bed and Breakfast
is
hysterical.
Yeah.
Kang, you like those?
Yeah. I mean, they just basically told him, hey, if you did own, you know, a rental property, how would you act? And he goes, well, this is what I would do. Yep. Perfect. Yep. Do that.
Yep.
You know what? Even with the rules, I'd still want to stay this place.
I think I would too.
No.
Unless one of those rules
is no fun.
No talking to me.
Yeah. Well, oh, you see?
All right, coach. I'm not going to come. I'm just going to stay at home.
Big fan of the Nick Saban Bed and Breakfast commercials. Big fan.
You know what? It would be funny if they had a rival coach do a bed and breakfast commercial and see how fun.
So which coach would have the best bed and breakfast?
Yeah. Like, what is that? Like a Lane Kiffin bed and breakfast?
A Lane Kiffin bed and breakfast would be wild, I would imagine.
It's too bad Mike Leach has passed, because Mike Leach's
bed and breakfast would be fantastic.
Mike Leach is a pitch man. It really is. Now I'm sad, because that guy had so much personality.
Yeah.
Would have been fantastic in stuff like this.
That's a good question. Which college football coach would have the most fun bed and breakfast? We know that Saban's is as by rule the least fun.
Right.
Because one of the rules is Harbaugh no fun.
Harbaugh would be weird.
Harbaugh's would be very, very strange. Harbaugh would have you doing something that you didn't want to do. You're like, what am I doing?
He'd be there with his shirt off, like at all times. Like, yeah. Dude.
With the khakis.
Yep.
Sitting up in a tree.
Right. You staying here with us, coach?
Everything's a sleepover.
In the SEC bed and breakfast, you got to pay him with a brown paper bag.
Yeah. You know who would be fun? Would be Joe Tiller. You would love staying at Joe Tiller. Not that he's a head coach anymore, but you'd love staying at Joe Tiller's
place. 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yep. Yeah. It'd be bourbon.
Yeah, lots of it.
Yep. By the way, I think that was the same year, Joe Tiller. I think he debuted at Purdue the same year that Nick Saban debuted at Michigan State. I think that was the same Big Ten meetings.
Like 95 or something?
Whatever it was. And Nick Saban got up in front of the media in Chicago and the whole auditorium, and I immediately made a snap judgment because he walked up. He stood at the podium, and the way I remember it, and it was a while ago, Nick Saban stood at the podium, brand new to Michigan State, in front of the entire media contingent and said, on offense, we have little talent. On defense, we have little talent. And I'm like, my God.
What a solid coach.
Talk about throwing your returning roster under the bus. But anyway, college coach would have the most fun bed and breakfast? Saban's is, by definition, the least fun.
Yeah, I think Kiffin would be a ton of fun. Like, what about, I mean, Kalen DeBoer? I don't think that sounds like any kind of fun.
I think Ryan Day would have a great bed and breakfast everywhere but Michigan.
What about, Sarkisian, he's a recovering alcoholic, so I don't know if that's going to be fun.
What about Dion's bed and breakfast?
Dion's could be fun.
Yep. I mean, Dion's could have a fun bed and breakfast.
Kurt Cignetti?
Kurt Cignetti would just tell you how great his bed and breakfast
was. Right, yeah, exactly. Google it.
Yeah.
That's his whole campaign of the, how do you know it's good? Google it. Check out the 5-star reviews. You guessed it, on Google.
I'm going to guess I wouldn't want to stay at Brian Kelly's bed and breakfast.
Be phony, right? It would look so good on the exterior, and then you start to examine a little closer, and you're like, wait a minute, what is this? Mm-hmm. Is this for Micah? The pictures made this look like it was this beautiful marble. What is that, Formica?
I would Marcus Freeman's bed and breakfast. Or I wouldn't like his, but I would like Marcus Freeman.
Yeah, everybody, yeah. That's a perfect way to put it.
Right?
God, this house, I don't like this house.
No.
But the host is awesome.
He's really nice.
This guy's nice. I want to root for him.
James Franklin.
I would like some tea sandwiches, and I don't even know what those are.
James Franklin's bed and breakfast.
He would ruin it.
It would be trying. That
he would be having the best time, and then he would show up, and you're like, oh, no.
I feel like James Franklin would be trying so hard to present his bed and breakfast as something special. Like, my bed and breakfast, it's all about the presentation.
Kirby Smart?
Who else? Kirby Smart. I think his bed and breakfast would be. I would not want to stay at Mel Tucker's bed and breakfast.
Yeah, I don't think that's in the cards. I don't think so. I don't think you have to worry about that.
I got to tell you, though, if they started incorporating more coaches leading into their personalities as hosting, these are Vrbo commercials, right?
I believe they are,
right? Yeah. I mean, they could really have a great commercial line here, but anyway.
But Dabo Swinney would be totally outdated.
It probably would be. And he'd only let the same people that have always stayed there stay there. Nobody knew.
Right, nothing new.
Behind the times, man.
Although they are. I just saw they did land a pretty big recruit in the portal.
Yeah, so they've started.
They have to do that now. Yep. Wait a minute. This is how it goes? Oh. Are we late to the game? Late to the dance here? Okay.
Okay. So, Lions... talked about the MVP stuff. We'll get back to some Lions stuff a little bit later on. Are we talking to the Birchie kid? We are today at 12:30. We go inside Allen Park with the Birchie kid, of course, covers the team, talk about what kind of went down this week and how they're approaching this weekend, because there is a lot of football to watch, a lot of scouting to be done. There was the college football playoff game last night. We'll get to that today. Penn State and Notre Dame at 11:20.
I got one more name for you. PJ Fleck.
P. PJ Flex Bed and Breakfast would probably feel awesome at first, and then you'd grow tired of PJ Fleck would say the same thing over and over and over. What's weird about PJ Fleck, honestly, I realized I'm back on board.
Well, the thing is, he's a lot of talk, and just when you doubt that there's any substance, you look at the record and like they just won 8 games again, again. Be a lot of rowing machines.
Yeah, that's right.
But it'd be fun. I think it would be on a lakefront. Get you out in the lake. And he'd be all about acting. I think you would love going to a PJ Fleck bed and breakfast.
I think I probably would.
Because he's so high energy.
Yep.
Let's treat this day. Let's go.
Yep.
Sun's going to rise in 10 minutes, people. Let's go.
Win the day.
Yeah.
Yep, sure.
That's your guy.
There's all kinds of them coming in here. Harbaugh's bed and breakfast. Whose bed and breakfast is better than ours? Nobody. Connor Stallions would spy on you at his bed and breakfast. Ohio State's coach's bed and breakfast would have black ink dye, hair dye all over the sink. All right. We'll get to the college football playoff last night, 11:20. Carson Anderson, 97.1, the ticket. This might be right up your alley, Gator. Kang, tell the people what's on Kang Collects podcast this week.
Oh, this week's episode? Doug, yeah. I'm glad you asked. As people know, if they listen to the podcast, they know if you can collect it, I'll talk about it. It's not always sports cards or comic books or whatever. This week's episode is about bourbon and whiskey, my friend.
Ooh.
And I know, I felt like when I was taping this episode, Gator, I thought, I should have had Gator co-host this one with me. Like, you would have really enjoyed it. Had probably better questions than I did. I'm a true novice when it comes to whiskey and bourbon, but hopefully it educated people, those that listen. You can download it for free in Odyssey, Doug, or wherever you get your podcast.
Nice.
That's Kang Collects. K-H-A-N-G Collects.
It's great. I assume that Pappy Van Winkle, that distillery is brought about.
That was brought up, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
That's a good one, huh, Gator?
Yeah. That perhaps Blanton's was brought up, maybe.
The word pour was brought up quite a few times.
Pour.
Yes, a pour.
It's a good pour.
Yep.
Dude, honestly, you should have been a part of it.
Yes, he should have.
Is that notes of oak? Right, you would have had all the great questions.
It's a hint of leather and struggle.
No, that's just Las Vegas.
That's different. That's a cologne.
Yeah, right.
So who did you have on?
His name is Trevor Deal. He is a executive bourbon steward. He knows a lot about this stuff, more than I do. And I didn't know how crazy the bourbon whiskey world was, to be honest with you. Like, some bottles are, you know, you can go to any liquor store and get a bottle of Jameson, whatever, right? But then there's other really high-end stuff that are limited edition.
You can really spend a lot of money on some of these because they're aged, and they're aged in different ways. And, you know, then there's limited runs on them, which makes it more expensive. That's why the Pappy stuff is so expensive, because they limit how many barrels they're going to produce, which means they're limiting how many bottles they're going to produce. And, you know, it's like impossible to find one, just to walk into a store and get one. You never see it.
You never see it.
You have. I went to a Christmas party at one of my neighbor's houses, and they had set up in their basement, they had this beautiful room that was almost like a speakeasy type thing. You had to go through this kind of strange door to get there, and it was like a cave in a lot of respects, with lots of concrete and like exposed concrete and stuff. It was kind of cool. And they had a bourbon collection, and I'd never been there before. I couldn't believe how many bottles of bourbon there were, and all different kinds of bottles of bourbon. I'm like, I have a lot in my house, maybe 20 different kinds, and I think that's a lot. My man here had to be 75 different bottles of bourbon.
And they let a commoner like you in?
And they let a commoner like me in there. And he said, like, you want to try? I'm like, no, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to mess up your stuff. Maybe another time.
Well.
Kang Collects.
Kang Collects. Wherever you find your podcast.
Did you guys get into scotch at all, or was it just bourbon and straight whiskey?
We might have, and I didn't even know.
It's funny. You say that, if, and honestly, I'm like bourbon, whiskey, scotch. It's all the same. Right? I have no idea the difference of any of them. You want some bourbon? No, I want some whiskey. Huh? I don't know.
Is there... Scotch comes from Scotland. Whether you have to use water and grains from Scotland, and bourbon is there's a different kind of, the percentage of mash has to be corn or whatever, and rye and all this stuff. And it's like when you look at champagne and sparkling wine or Prosecco. Champagne can only come from the Champagne region in France. Otherwise, it's sparkling wine. And in Italy, it's Prosecco. They're sparkling wine.
Honest to God, you should have hosted this damn podcast.
How do you spell whiskey, Gator?
Well, you can spell with an H or without an H.
Or with an E. Without an E.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on what country you're getting the whiskey from.
You wanted the lesson on tequila that I gave you, you know, a dozen years ago when we were at the airport.
Dude, that was so funny. I mean, Gator knows his liquor, right? And we're flying back from the Super Bowl.
Yeah, in Dallas.
And they had tequila tastings at the duty free shop. And Gator walked up and acted like he knew nothing, and had the girl explain to him as he put back another mini shot and another. This is a Blanco.
Blanco? Oh, Blanco. Oh, okay.
So he's playing dumb.
This is a rep. I don't know how you say that. Reposado. Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Well, it means rested. Oh, okay. It means it's aged up to
so he puts away five shots of tequila, and we're walking around the Dallas airport killing time, and we come across a second duty-free shop where they're doing the same thing, and Gator puts on the same act.
Big airport.
This time he was slurred when he was saying Gator.
What's that?
We hopped on the direct flight from DFW to DTW, and guess what? Gator was hammered.
An easy flight. Easy flight back.
For free, by the way. Right. Classic.
Can I get you something to drink? No, thank you. I've had plenty. You know, maybe just a little taste.
Do you have a Repanejo?
Repanejo, I like that.
Anyway,
times.
Ken collects the podcast. Check it out. So last night, college football semifinal.
Yeah.
We had a good game.
That we did.
There's apparently nothing for... the college football world to bitch about, although there probably is something. I'm amazed at how much, no, it doesn't matter the formula, people bitch about college football's postseason. But, Gator, if I were a Penn State fan today, I would be kicking myself. I would be so mad that they didn't win that football game.
Yep.
And it's not the interception at the end, although that wouldn't please me. That wouldn't please me.
Kicking yourself, yeah.
But I said it yesterday on the show, I don't trust Aller. He will throw a big pick. That's my prop bet of the day. And he did. And I feel bad for the kid. But it feels like so many Penn State quarterbacks over the years seem to do that. And I don't know what it is, and I don't like piling on. But he didn't have a very good game. He missed two touchdown passes. And one was a catchable ball. Singleton or Catron Allen? I think it was Singleton that didn't catch it. And the other one was out of the backfield, would have been like a 90-yard touchdown pass, but he overthrew him by a couple yards. But at halftime, the fact that the score was 10-3 when Penn State so controlled the first half of that game felt like, to me, that's where the game was lost. It should have been minimum 17-3, probably 24-3. Like, I can't believe they only led by 7. And additionally, I don't know how they did not recover the strip sack fumble when the Steve Angeli kid was in, and they sacked him right before the half, and the ball appeared to roll up right to a Penn State player who drops on the football. Then Notre Dame guys jump in late. I never really saw a replay of how Penn State didn't recover that ball. I think if they recover that ball, it would have been actually decent field position with some time left where they might have been able to get some points out of them themselves. It wouldn't have been a one-score game at half. Notre Dame getting that field goal with a backup quarterback and two backup offensive linemen in the game at the end of the half. I just feel like the focus will go to the end, and understandably so. But I think just as critical was their inability to take a bigger lead. Notre Dame survived the first half. Penn State controlled play and they were only up 10-3. And that's as much where I think the game was lost.
Yeah, I mean, when we discussed this game yesterday, I think we both said about the quarterbacks, neither one was terribly impressive. They can make plays with their feet. That was Riley Leonard's thing. What he can do is he can make some plays with his feet, but you don't trust his arm. And sure enough, he throws two picks. You mentioned about Drew Aller, and you just had a feeling that he's going to throw an untimely interception because that's what he's done, and that's what he did. He threw an untimely interception on a horrific decision. And if you're Penn State, you're kicking yourselves all day long because they ran the ball very effectively. They had over 200 yards rushing. We're averaging 5 yards a carry against Notre Dame's defense, and it felt like when they wanted to, just go ahead and run it, and you'll take up huge chunks of yards. You'll eat up the clock, and you'll put the ball in the end zone when you need to. I mean, Singleton ended up with 3 touchdown runs, all by the goal line, and they were, hard-fought runs. But in the end, they had some plays that definitely cost them. And then Notre Dame's got their running back, Jeremiah Love, who's got the knee injury. His touchdown run, I think it was his touchdown run by the goal line. Oh, my God, wow. What an effort.
Wow.
What an absolute man that he showed to be in that effort. And as always with the college football games, being a Lions fan, you're watching these games and you're saying, okay, who's standing out here that I want to see in a Lions uniform at some point? And Abdul Carter, the defensive end, the pass rushing specialist for Penn State, who I believe is Mel Kiper's number 2 overall prospect in the draft, was playing basically with one arm. His left shoulder was messed up. So he only had one move to do, and that is to try to get to the outside of the right tackle and kind of use his good arm, his right arm, to get past him and get after the quarterback. And he did. Time and time again, he was able to do that. He was only credited with 1 sack, but I swear to God, I thought he had 3 sacks in the game. One was wiped out at the end on a hands-to-the-face penalty that I know you can't stand. And
we'll get into that later.
Yeah, those are tough. But he was great. Ends up with having a really nice game. And the other guy that stood out to me, I'm watching this player, and I'm like, number 6. Well, who is that? Wheatley? Who's this Wheatley guy? And he's listed as a safety, but he's also playing some corner. He's covering receivers wide out. I don't know if you saw the stats after the game, Doug. Zaki Wheatley, who's a junior, 16 tackles in the game.
Yep.
16. And what I loved about what he did is that once he diagnosed it was a running play, the way he would shoot into the backfield and make that play was just impressive. And, safety with ability to cover as a corner, can't have enough of those guys in the NFL. And, of course, Abdul Carter. And, the Lions were waiting for the moment where Brad Holmes gets up to the podium and it's an F them picks move, give you a couple first-round picks to get this guy. And if they could get Abdul Carter,
I can't see them trading up that far.
I don't think they could trade up because you'd have to trade up maybe in the top 5 to get him. If you get a couple quarterbacks gone and a couple of corners gone, is he the next guy that goes, or is he the third player that goes?
I think it's way too far for them to trade up. But yeah, look, that Jeremiah Love run called into mind one of Michigan and one of Michigan State, and just a sheer determination. And I want to make those comps coming up today at 11:32. Plus, that game featured my 2 least favorite penalty calls. And you mentioned one of them already. We'll get to that. Plus, your phone calls and feedback. And a little preview of tonight's Texas-Ohio State game here on 97.1 The Ticket. Doug Carr, Scott Anderson, open lines, 97.1 The Ticket. Bill is in Novi and on 97.1. Hello, Bill.
Hi, guys. How we doing?
Good, sir.
Yeah, I'm doing great after last night's game. To answer one of your comments were made earlier, I think it was actually Abdul Carter that fell on the ball, that fumble, but with only one good arm, I think the Notre Dame linemen were able to out-wrestle him underneath, but that guy is fantastic. He was unbelievable the whole game along, especially with one arm. But, I mean, just quick. And Notre Dame's got a couple injuries on the offensive line, but I don't care who was out there. He's just tremendous.
Yep.
But I got to say, I've kind of given up about – they dominated the first 28 minutes. I mean, Notre Dame was just getting pushed all around. And like you said, the score should have been a lot worse. But I mean, Notre Dame put it together at halftime, and the thing that surprised the heck out of me was Riley Leonard actually being able to complete passes downfield. I haven't seen that much this year. But that guy's a competitor and a leader, and I was just, you know, proud of the team that they came back that way and wound up winning the game. I think too much could be made on Penn State blowing it. I think Notre Dame played fantastic in the second half and took it from them.
I think that's fair to say. Notre Dame played a really good game. I mean, they had a couple of missteps, but their defense is very good as well. And they made plays when they needed to make plays. And if you know, I can dog the terrible pass by Aller, but the reality is Notre Dame player made a play on it. He also made the interception.
Well, the unsung hero, right, is Steve Angeli comes into that game under those circumstances and goes, what, 6 of 7 on that drive? And gets him to the field goal.
He hadn't made a competitive pass in a year. It's all, just mop-up duty all year long. And to come in against that defense and that pressure and just, you know, hit a couple guys right on the numbers, looked like Jared Goff out there. It was only 3 points, but I think it stemmed the tide and kind of helped turn the game for sure.
You go into half down one score, getting the football to start the second half is a way different feeling than being down 10-0. And, I mean, clearly they modified their game plan, came out and got Jeremiah Love going. And his determination on that touchdown run, I mentioned this before the break, I think Michigan and Michigan State fans can hearken back to runs where your running back would not be denied. L.J. Scott at the end of the Big Ten championship game against Iowa, and Blake Corum in overtime against Alabama, where you're breaking tackles. You're straining for every inch, and you get to the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, I knew you were going to say the L.J. Scott game. I just wanted to pull up the box score from that game. Michigan State's last drive in that championship effort, 22 plays, 82 yards, eating up 9 minutes and 4 seconds.
I was about to say, didn't they start that drive in the third quarter?
It was unbelievable. And they had, how many plays do you think MSU ran in that game? Normal college football game, final score 20-13.
Was that the score of that game, 20-13?
20-13. I'm sorry, no, it was the number of touchdowns. It was 16-13.
Okay, I was like, I don't remember it being 20-13.
16-13.
Yep, come on. How many plays did they run? I don't know, 80? 60?
79 plays.
Did they?
But that's a lot of plays.
That's a lot of plays.
Yeah.
A lot of plays. In a low-scoring game.
Wait, well, I was involved, so.
Well, I guess it's true. It kind of goes. So that game also, that Notre Dame-Penn State game featured two of my least favorite penalty calls. One, I just find sheer frustration over illegal hands to the face. Illegal hands to the face looks to me like something that feels like it happens 90% of plays. And illegal hands to the face feel like they drop, these are penalty flags that drop out of the sky and ruin good defensive plays. And they almost never have anything to do with the play either, right? It's just it's a rush. It's typically a quarterback or a pass play where a defender gets their hands up into offensive player's face mask. And you see running backs stiff arm off face mask. That's allowed. That's not illegal hands to the face, but a defensive lineman can't do it to an offensive lineman. And maybe it just feels like there's a history where illegal hands to the face penalties have ruined so many good plays and teams that I root for is history. I hate illegal hands to the face.
Well, and it's one that should be reviewable in my book. And same thing with face masking. And because it is so punitive. I mean, it ends up being a 15-yard penalty. That's massive. An automatic first down, the whole bit. And you know, when it happens last night, was it a legitimate call? You betcha it was a legitimate call. I mean, a guy who was all up in his grill on two different, and the same play, but two different occasions on the same play. I don't like to, you know, when it comes to that because of our PTSD with the Lions, mm-hmm. when you go back to Trey Flowers against the Packers, got called for it twice in the same game, and it was clearly not hands to the face. It was annoying. That was called that way. and I believe it was Booger McFarland, I think, was part of the broadcast in that one, and they're doing the replays on it. He's like, that's not hands to the face. And then they would bring in the referee from the booth or whatever, and he's like, oh, yeah, you're right. That's not. It's not. And then you'd get more frustrated, and here we are going back to the SOL days. But that's where it is. That's where it stems. That's why we don't necessarily like it.
The other call that I can't stand, and I don't know what can be done about it, I hate the pass interference call where a ball, it's on a deep ball, and it's underthrown, and the receiver slows down, and the defensive back runs into him, and the offense gets rewarded with a DPI because they're being rewarded for a crappy throw. And I don't know what a defender's supposed to do there. Like, you want to react to the football. You're turning around when the receiver starts to look like they're about to make a play on a football. And the first thing they do is stop running or slow down dramatically. And the DB runs into the wide receiver or the tight, or the DB runs into the intended receiver and gets a pass interference because the quarterback underthrew the ball. I hate that. And I don't know what can be done about it. I just find it frustrating because it doesn't feel like the offense in that play under those circumstances is earning the yardage they're about to get.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like they should. And you had the play that you're mentioning in the end zone, and it was called interference, and it's rightfully called interference. The defensive back didn't turn around. But you're right, it was woefully underthrown, and the interference had no effect on the interception.
Nope. The interception came from the third guy in.
Yeah, because it was so underthrown, and the wide receiver isn't going to be able to stop and then come back and make a play on it. He wasn't in position for it, and yet they do get rewarded for it. And I get it. There's a frustration there because it feels like, well, hold on. There's extenuating circumstances with this one, but they won't look at it that way.
So Notre Dame's defense did a great job. Their pass defense was very opportunistic and made some big plays. And the question is, can they handle Quinn Ewers and the Texas passing attack? I think everybody's wondering if that's going to be the case. No? No? Anyone? Okay. So you're not picking Texas to win the game tonight?
Oh, no. No.
So what's interesting about this, you tell me if you're surprised. It feels like the whole world thinks Ohio State's winning this game. And they just played a game in the Rose Bowl where they looked like they were playing Stony Brook. Like they dominated Oregon. Why is this point spread only 5.5? It's only 5.5.
Well, I mean, you can't discount that Texas is good, right? Although Texas has rode to get here, beating Clemson, who is the worst ranked team to be in this in the college football playoff, and then beating Arizona State, who I don't think many people gave much of an opportunity to.
Wasn't Indiana worse ranked than Texas?
No, I they don't weren't? Believe so. Okay. Clemson is the worst ranked, I said. They that beat Clemson.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Clemson was ranked like 16th in the country, but got in because of their situation. So to beat Arizona State, it took two overtimes to do it, which I think people were surprised by. Like, should they really be struggling with Arizona State? But to your point, it's 5 points. Or now ESPN has it as 6. It does seem like it's a little light, and Ohio State has thumped their last two opponents, Oregon and Tennessee. I guess I am a little surprised, but, it's a semifinal game. Should it be more than that, though? It's a semifinal game.
The semifinal games have been blowouts historically. Their average margin of victory in those is actually bigger than the average margin of victory was in this playoff leading up to that. Like, they are historically blowouts. I don't know if that should have anything to do with it.
Well, I'm saying that it's also a different system this time around than it was before when you only had 4 teams. Now you actually had a playoff to get there, and Ohio State had to play in there. So they've been battle tested here to this point to get to this point, and I think so is Texas. So maybe that's going to play a role in it, that they expect it to be a closer game. I don't know. I mean, I would take Ohio State minus the points.
If Texas does lose to Ohio State, guys, do you think this is Quinn Ewers' last game as Texas' quarterback?
Could be.
Do you think it will be?
I mean, it's a total guess by me, but I guess. It feels like the Carson Beck thing. I think Carson Beck is sick of getting disrespected and like, screw this, I'm out of here. And I think Quinn Ewers probably feels the same way.
And plus like $6 million.
I'll take it a step further. I think that if Texas is down at halftime by like 10 points, he's done playing.
Oh, they're gonna Arch?
Absolutely. I think that they will, Sarkisian will do what his mentor did.
That was crazy. When Tua came in?
Crazy, and it worked.
But they were down a lot, right?
When Tua came in?
Yeah. When
I don't think they were down.
No? No, I don't think so.
But that was so crazy.
The one thing that Texas has, and I'd be interested to see if Sarkisian tries to have Jahdae Barron, the Jim Thorpe Award winner, travel with Jeremiah Smith. Or no matter where Jeremiah Smith lines up, does he put the Jim Thorpe Award winner on him? And then say, we'll handle everybody else. But we're going to put our Jim Thorpe Award winner on Jeremiah Smith.
Careful. I mean, if you do that, because you know what Iowa State likes to do with the receiving core when they decide to throw the ball, which hopefully that's what they do tonight if they want to win. Those guys run routes where they just cross all over each other, and you can get hung up with that. And next thing you know, he's way open.
Of course, but I don't know. If you got to strengthen the secondary, I would say that that's you know.
How about you just
try and take him away? Try and take him away.
You double him. Well, do that and then have a safety also ready to go.
Triple him?
No. No, I'm saying do have the your Thorpe Award winner take a man-to-man, but he's got help.
Michigan Auto Law, auto accident attorneys. They specialize in auto and truck accidents. Many law firms don't specialize but focus on many different areas of the law. Educated consumers will choose Michigan Auto Law. Do your research and learn more at autolaw.com. Once they take your case, they'll communicate with you. They are the best in customer service and satisfaction. If someone in my family need an attorney for an accident, I would send them to our guy Steve and his team at Michigan Auto Law. They care more, so you win more. Michigan Auto Law, auto accident attorneys. Visit autolaw.com. That's autolaw.com. Doug Karsh, Scott Anderson, 97, won a ticket. 248-539-9797. All right, so get back to some Lions stuff in the noon hour. Last night, we talked a little college football playoff, and man, pretty damn entertaining game. Pretty damn entertaining game. Notre Dame gets a win on a last-second field goal. Did you see that stat that, like, in the college football playoff, I don't know exactly what it was, but game-winning field goal attempts were 0 for 4.
Yeah, I did see that. I was like, wow. In the fourth quarter, yeah.
Which speaks to the pressure that the Jeter kid was under.
That or how few opportunities there are to do that.
You know what? The other thing that's creating some scrutiny today is Penn State on that final field goal attempt had two guys lined up 15 yards off the line of scrimmage. There was 12 seconds left. In a tie game on 4th and 8 from the 25-yard line, the holder for Notre Dame is a kicker. It's not a backup quarterback. The probability of there being a fake field goal there, and the only thing I can think of is the reason why Penn State has two guys 15 yards off the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
Is because the only coach in football that would consider faking a field goal in that situation was coaching Penn State.
James Franklin can't help himself.
Is it weird?
When it comes to making dumb decisions. Because 100% with the last second field goal, 10 seconds left or whatever it was, 4th and 8, they're not going to fake it. They're going to try to kick it. Do everything in your power to block that kick.
Put your 2-6-7 guys in the middle of the line.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not like Penn State hasn't come up with big block kicks in their history, because they have. try to do this one to a team that really is it had struggled with kicking the football. Try that. It's a 41-yard attempt. It's not. It was no gimme. But that's not what they do because that guy heads that team over.
It just seems weird to me. Maybe it's a completely irrelevant, but I the possibility of there being a fake there is beyond minuscule. Like, but whatever. All right, Pistons played last night. Golden State did not get the win. Cade went off in the fourth, finished with 32 points, and they're back at 500. Look, I mean, this isn't like a blown opportunity, and it's not particularly significant in the season. It would have been fun to be talking about a win over Golden State today, though. I'll just say that.
It would have been great.
I'm done. I can't believe they finally lost.
Furious comeback. Hey, first loss in the new year for a Detroit team. Red Wings play tonight at home against Chicago. Pistons are back at it tomorrow night at home against Toronto. It was a furious comeback in the fourth quarter. Cade Cunningham was a force in the fourth quarter, and they had a legit shot.
They did.
With just a few seconds left to try to tie things up. They were down by three. I think Beasley took the shot, had a pretty good look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, they missed the shot and missed the opportunity to tie it and go to overtime. But it's on them. They got to, you can't get behind that much in the fourth quarter and try to expect to do it again. And I forget which one of you guys said it was off the air. I don't know if it was you, Doug, or Kang. That
was
you
it gotta, smart?
Yeah, because if it was me.
I think it probably was Kang. You got to take advantage of a game and a night where Steph Curry is 2 for 13 from 3-point land.
Yeah,
you
got
to take advantage of that. That was definitely Kang.
No, but I agree. It felt like a blown opportunity when Steph's not on and he's not cooking. Beat the Warriors. And I know the Warriors aren't the same team they used to be in the past, but he's off. Take advantage of it. It felt like they weren't getting a loose balls. I do want to say something. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but the Pistons, they did something perfectly last night, and I don't know if they could ever do it again.
I don't know that anybody, if you're talking about what I'm thinking about, I don't know that I've ever seen it executed better, and I don't think I'll ever see it executed better again.
I never again, right? Like, that was perfect.
We're talking about the perfect missed, intentionally missed free throw.
Bingo. Unbelievable. What?
Cade got the ball from the ref, fired a line drive at the rim, that just barely touched the rim, hit the backboard, and came back to him before anybody knew what happened.
Yeah.
The Pistons were down three. He had one more free throw to go. I don't know that you will ever see it better executed than that.
And then he kicked out to Fantaggio to shoot a three, but the refs already started blowing the whistle. They're like, dude, you can't do that.
Like, can't do what? And let the play go through, and they don't, and
they review it.
Yep, and then they're
which
like,
was a good thing because Fontecchio shot a 26-footer from 22 feet.
But funny because Kelsey says in a broadcast, a TV broadcast last night, he goes, "I didn't see it, George, but I heard it." And then they show the replay, and I'm just waiting to hear it, and you could definitely hear it, you know, like, and he was right; it was an easy. Should have been an easy review, and it took forever to get the review done. It's like, he definitely hit the rim. Let's go. Move on.
Well, I mean, look, great play from the Pistons of late. Awesome to see. And, yeah, it was a furious comeback. And it was the best executed intentionally missed free throw in the history of the game.
Right, that they had stopped play for. But I want to give props to your boy Gator, Ron Holland. I'm thoroughly impressed with him so far. He just comes in. He looks like he belongs in this league. He plays with high energy, high defense all the time. He didn't back down for anything. Remember, he almost threw hands earlier this year, Doug?
Yeah.
And then Draymond last night, the agitator he is, he doesn't back down from Draymond. I really like Ron Holland as well, man.
And he's only going to get better as a shooter, and he's one of those pupils under the shooting Coach Vincent that he's going to get better at it. And if that adds to his game, if this guy's like a legit 35 or a better percentage shooter from 3-point land, they got a player. They got a real player in the draft.
It's funny because you guys mentioned what Steph Curry was from three. Do you see what he was from the floor?
No.
5 of 21.
Oof.
Terrible. He was off, man.
He was way off.
Yep. Now, he didn't miss a free throw when we needed him to miss a free throw, but whatever.
He was 91% in his career. You don't expect him to miss them.
This is true. So, anyway, good run for the Pistons, and they try and start a new streak coming up against the Raptors tomorrow. Red Wings, they play tonight, right? They play tonight,
yes, they play tonight against Chicago at LCA.
And, look, that's a team that's been streaking. That's a team that's white hot. And that's a team that's playing another game against an opponent I would like to think that they should beat and advance this win streak to 6 games.
That would be nice.
Yep.
Just keep it going.
Keep it going. All right, so coming up next hour, we'll talk to the Birchie Kid at 12:30. We'll go inside Allen Park. Got a question about whether or not this has happened at your work. Want to preview the wild card weekend. And where's the upset? Where's the upset brewing this weekend with the 6 games that obviously we have vested interest in, clearly in the NFC game? This is a first-time experience. And I don't know if this means you watch more football or less football. Because having a chance to win a Super Bowl feels like I'm more vested in the NFL playoffs than ever before. Not playing feels like an opportunity before what you hope is an epic run to get anything last ditch things done on the weekend when the Lions aren't playing. Because we hope they have 3 more games left in 3 of the next 4 weekends after this one. But I feel like that's no reason to watch less football.
Oh, no.
I feel like I'm all in watching more football. But we tweeted out the question today and asked, where's the upset this weekend? And we will go over each and every matchup coming up next hour. More Lions Talk 12:30 with the Birchie Kid. It is Carson Anderson, 97.1.